This is getting pretty old.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Here's the scenario. There's a newspaper story that a certain bank is in big trouble. The stock price plummets. The Federal Reserve and the government call a Sunday night press conference. They say, "Don't worry, we won't let this bank fail." Remember, that's what happened with Bear Stearns? And again last night with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The Fed and the Treasury basically said they will do whatever it takes to make sure Fannie and Freddie survive. Here's why. Those two hold $5 trillion in debt. That's about half the outstanding mortgages in this country. We begin with Amy Scott, our New York bureau chief. Amy, what's their plan?
Okay, well, the Treasury Department is asking Congress to temporarily increase a line of credit that each of these companies currently has. Then the Treasury is also looking for temporary authority to buy equity in either company if needed. The Federal Reserve has also authorized the firms to borrow directly from the central bank at the discount rate that commercial banks pay. And the Treasury plans to give the Fed a role in determining how much capital Fannie and Freddie have to have on hand.
All right. The question we'd all like to know is, how does this affect taxpayers?
Well, yesterday, New York Senator Charles Schumer praised the plan, saying it would minimize the cost to taxpayers. This seems to be designed to boost investor confidence in the two companies without actually injecting any cash yet. But this really does take these companies from having an implicit guarantee from the government to more of an explicit one.
Well, this seems very explicit. You mentioned they're asking Congress. So what's the timeline here for getting something done?
Well, the Treasury Department hopes that this will be approved as part of a bill that's already in the works in Congress. So we could see something as soon as this week.
All right. Amy Scott in New York. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
This announcement is affecting markets everywhere. Fannie and Freddie shares have climbed dramatically this morning. And Wall Street is getting a boost from it. So far, the Dow is up 73 points, a little over 0.5% to 11,173. The NASDAQ is up 9. The S&P 500 has gained 7. In Europe, the markets are close to 2% higher. There were mostly small losses in Asia. Now, about the rumors that fly around in these panic scenarios. The Securities and Exchange Commission says it's had enough of that, and the gossip must stop. Marketplace's Steve Henn has more.
There's nothing worse than a nasty rumor, like arriving back at high school and hearing you've been seen.
Dressed in a cheerleading outfit and covered in makeup.
And that's nothing compared to the rumor mill on Wall Street. In the past year, Lehman Brothers lost 78% of its value. Executives there say a lot of the damage was done by vicious gossip, spread by people shorting their stock. If that's true, it would be illegal. But Jim Doty, a former general counsel at the SEC, says proving it's almost impossible.
It's always been an intractable problem for the commission.
J. Robert Brown, a securities law professor at the University of Denver, says now the SEC is trying another approach.
So what they're doing is they're shifting the focus. They're saying, if we think somebody's out there spreading rumors, we're going to go after them for having inadequate procedures.
By forcing traders to prove they've checked their facts before they've talked down a stock, the SEC hopes to leave short sellers, at least temporarily, tongue-tied. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
I think we should dig a little deeper on this Fannie and Freddie thing. No doubt our man Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine has something to say about all this.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Okay, Alan, give us some background. How did we get here with Fannie and Freddie?
Part of the last batches of stuff the government did was it allowed Fannie and Freddie to buy much more in the way of mortgage-backed securities than they would otherwise have, the idea being you didn't want those prices to melt down and you wanted a buyer in the market. So these guys, who are now having problems because they're so exposed to mortgage-backed securities, went out and bought hundreds of billions of dollars more of mortgage-backed securities because of a special dispensation they got from the Treasury and the White House, which sort of told their regulator to let them do this.
That seems, in hindsight, to be a pretty stupid thing to do.
Well, hindsight is wonderful. And yeah, it is. And at the time, I said, this increases the Fannie and Freddie risk. It's an intelligent gamble. It's a smart thing to do, but it really increases the risk. And by God, it has increased the risk. So I was half right, which is better, I think, than the government's been. The government's maybe been a quarter right.
Well, do you think the government has learned anything here about trying to anticipate problems instead of waiting until the horses have already left the barn?
Well, often when you anticipate, you want people to do things that are painful, and they get upset. Because the guy who regulates Fannie and Freddie, named Jim Lockhart, who I think is a very smart guy, he's been trying for 2 years now to sit on these guys and get them to put up more capital and cut back their risk. And the minute there's a problem, everybody runs and loosens the regulations on Fannie and Freddie. And mortgages that are being made to be sold to Fannie and Freddie are now something like 80% of the mortgage market. And if these guys can't buy, you're going to have an incredible mess. The lenders are going to have to make the mortgage loans and keep them.
All right. Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thank you.
You're welcome, Scott.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, July 14th on Marketplace.org. Let's see, what else is making news this morning? That beer deal is going to happen. Anheuser-Busch has agreed to the buyout by InBev. Shareholders and regulators still have to approve it. InBev says it plans to use St. Louis as its North American headquarters and that all 12 North American breweries will stay open. There's a new study out this morning about middle-class people and their retirement. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
The study found that 3 out of 5 middle-class Americans retiring now will outlive their savings if they keep the same standard of living. Tom Neubig of Ernst & Young authored the report for Americans for Secure Retirement. He says many people think their expenses will drop enough when they stop working, but that's not realistic.
They know that they won't have to pay as much taxes, they won't have to be saving, they won't have work-related expenses. But this study shows that they will have to much more significantly cut back on their current standard of living.
By about 24%. And if you're retiring in 5 to 10 years, you'll have to cut back even more. Neubig says the reason we're so unprepared, fewer pensions and defined benefit plans to supplement our Social Security. Oh, well, I guess we could all just sell the country home. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The tax rebate checks have all gone out now, just barely. But believe it or not, there's talk of another economic stimulus package this fall. Stacey Vanek Smith explains.
Democrats like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and would-be President Barack Obama want a second stimulus package of around $50 billion, but don't expect another check from the IRS. This round would focus on new infrastructure projects as a way to jumpstart the flagging economy. Karen Shaw Petru is with Federal Financial Analytics.
Employment in the construction and the building trade, production of goods and materials needed in infrastructure spending. That's good for the economy.
But government spending has its critics. Gerald O'Driscoll is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. He says these projects cost a lot of money, and that money comes from one place, Joe Q. Taxpayer.
You're going to either have to raise taxes or sell bonds, and in either case, you're extracting resources from the private sector.
Either way, O'Driscoll says we shouldn't hold our breath. He says little is likely to happen before the presidential election in November. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Beijing's getting ready to host the Summer Olympics, of course, but in other parts of China, there's a much bigger task ahead, rebuilding from that devastating earthquake. Can you imagine if you lived in a village where almost every home was destroyed? Would you just give up and move on? Lisa Chow has the story of one village that sees this as an opportunity.
To get to Baoshan, you have to drive halfway up a mountain range called Dragon's Gate. The village is remote, but unlike many rural areas in China, it isn't poor. The village leader, Jia Qing, shows me a 36-hole golf course.
From where we stand, the view is serene, but turn in the other direction and you see piles of rubble. More than 90% of the homes collapsed in the May earthquake. One of the few structures still standing is a large, modernist glass, steel, and concrete building. And that building is the reason Jia is confident the village will thrive again. It serves as headquarters for Baoshan Corporation, which employs most of the village.
Our mission is very clear. We insist on getting rich collectively. Everyone in the village is a stakeholder in the company.
Baoshan is what you call a village enterprise. The economic concept took off in the late 1970s under former President Deng Xiaoping as a way to help develop China's countryside. And for the past 30 years, Baoshan's leaders have been unusually entrepreneurial. The mountain village first got rich from copper mining. Then it invested in hydropower. Now its main business is tourism because it's perfectly situated near two national parks. Jia Qing says he started working on plans to transform Baoshan into a spa destination. Now, because most of the village is destroyed, the way is clear to push ahead with these plans.
The geological environment brought us the hot springs, but if you look at it another way, it's also the reason the earthquake took place here. So we get both bad and good.
Like many Baoshan residents, Cheng Guozhang prefers to focus on the good. Cheng is 65 and used to run a tea house along the village's main road. As we walk to where her tea house stood, she tells me her husband died in the quake. He was one of 54 that died, a big number for a village of 2,000. But Cheng remains optimistic about the future.
Please come back when we finish the reconstruction. In 5 years, we'll have built an even better Baoshan village.
And it's not too hard to believe, since residents as company stakeholders have every incentive to rebuild. In Baoshan, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.